can't say we didn't have fun. We did. We had lots of fun, and the fact that the members of the club were the only ones in on it made it that much more exciting. They were nasty tricks we pulled, we knew that all along, but we felt the victims deserved whatever they got. Our plans were so clever, so ingenious, that it seemed we could never get caught. You see, we pulled tricks for each other. Darren pulled Cheryl's trick on Rebecca, I pulled Randall's trick on Drew, and so on. That way it would be hard to figure out who was responsible. After all, what possible reason would I have for pulling a trick on Drew Landers? I could get away with it because I wasn't even a suspect. Working as a team made it hard for anyone, even us, sometimes to figure out just who was doing what to whom. I guess every nightmare has to start somewhere. Ours started here. Lunchtime. Tuesday. It was raining, so everyone was crammed into the cafeteria, which still had the faint smell of 069p smoke from the small fire the week before. Cousin Rebecca was getting a present today, but only the members of the Shadow Club knew about it, and we all watched, scattered, across the room, so as not to look suspicious, patiently waiting for Rebecca to open that ridiculous lunchbox with teddy bears all over it. Darren had taken care of this particular trick, so the rest of us knew what to expect, but weren't exactly sure when to expect it. Rebecca was all smiles, singing songs from Annie to herself and friends because she had gotten the lead role. Then she turned to open her lunchbox. Nothing happened. I looked around the room. All eyes of the Shadow Club were focused on her. She talked a little bit more and reached into her lunchbox, pulling out the little plastic container that held her sandwich. I grimaced, preparing myself. Nothing. She opened the sandwich box and pulled out a wedge of a gooey-looking peanut butter sandwich. She opened her bag of chips. Nothing. She laughed and sang and porked out on her peanut butter sandwich, and then she reached for the thermos. Oh no. I thought to myself. The thermos. Oh, how terrible. How marvelously, wonderfully terrible. I looked over toward Darren and knew that this had to be it, for a smile had crept over his face. Rebecca unscrewed the cap to the thermos and tilted its T4EJLFVVFUB70 open and toward the cup in her hand. A small green garter snake slithered its way out of the thermos into the cup, and then through sweet little Becky's fingers. It took Rebecca a few moments to scream. I mean, how often do you expect a snake to come out of your thermos? It took about 3 seconds, then the thermos went flying, the snake went flying, and Rebecca let out a blood-curdling scream that sounded 5 times as loud in the tile cafeteria as it would have outside. It didn't stop there. The snake landed on another table, and everyone there began to scream. Off it went into the air again, landing on some poor guy's sandwich, and his table began to scream. That poor little snake made it halfway around the cafeteria that day, and before long, people who didn't even know what was going on were screaming as well. Rebecca continued to wail with a voice that kind of sounded like the way she sang. Then, as she tended to do, whenever life got the better of her, she began to suck her thumb, but her eyes went wide when she realized that the particular thumb she was sucking on had touched the snake. Out came the thumb and the screaming began once more. As the chaos grew in the cafeteria, Cheryl came up to me and whispered to me. Isn't revenge sweet? She said, and it certainly was. The Shadow Club was off to a flying start. A 71A, Vera Donaldson, the most popular girl in school, had a diary that she talked about, but never, ever brought to school. She also had a 9-year-old brother, and, as everyone knows, 9-year-old brothers can be bribed. With Randall as mastermind, we found ourselves sitting in the middle of Stonehenge, with Vera Donaldson's diary sitting there with us. This is scary, said Jason. It's like we got some sort of Bible with us. Randall smiled. Vera's entire life is in this book. Dare we wreck it? Asked Cheryl, and everyone screamed, yes! Yes! We handed the diary to Abby, and she read all about Vera's little life, which really did sound like a soap opera, until we came across a juicy bit of information that was just the sort of thing we were looking for. When the meeting was over, Randall and Cheryl took the diary to the nearest copy shop and brought along their collection of dimes. By dinner time, the diary was back in the hands of Vera's little brother, and she never knew it was missing. When morning came, everything was ready. All of us arrived super early to put up the papers around school. Nobody suspected. Vera arrived at school and was greeted by a piece of N72N paper taped to the front entrance that said the following, in her unmistakable handwriting, "Dear Diary, it's getting worse. I see him every day, and one want to talk to him, but one can't. I don't think he likes me. I'm sure he doesn't. I'll bet he thinks one like all those guys that keep asking me out. I love the clothes he wears, and I love the way he talks, but he never talks to me. I love his hair, style, and you know, he really has grown taller over the summer, I'm sure of it. I can't tell anyone, Diary, because they'll all think I'm new is, but I think I'm in love with Martin Bricker, and I don't know what to do. I was there when Vera saw it. She didn't scream, she just sort of moaned in disbelief. Other kids had seen it already, half the school had read it. Vera tore the page down and ripped it up, but as she went in, she saw the same piece of paper on every single classroom door in the school. Everybody stared at her. Martin? They sneered. You like Martin? Even Tyson McCall laughed at her, and if Tyson laughs at you, you know you're in trouble. D73D, Vera, you see, was a 9th grader. And Martin was an 8th grader. A short 8th grader. If ever in history there were two people not meant to be together, these were the two. Vera's face turned red, although it was hard to see it beneath all of that makeup, and she ran into the girls' bathroom, where she stayed till at least third period. Martin Bricker, on the other hand, was in heaven all day. Just as Jason Perez had told us, David Berger and his silver trumpet got all the solos in band, and he was always called to play with the high school band. At this weekend's high school football game, he had a solo that neither he nor anyone sitting in front of him would ever forget. It was a simple enough plan that OP had thought up, but it would have been easy to get caught there in broad daylight under the bleachers. OP had a lot more guts than anyone ever gave her credit for. The band had warmed up and gotten ready to play. Jason told us that once their first march started, David wouldn't play a note until his solo came up, and that was perfect. After warming up, David put his trumpet down next to him. He didn't notice when it was pulled away underneath the bleachers a moment later, and then returned to the exact spot where he had left it. The song began, David stood up for his solo, blew into D74B, his mouthpiece, and a whole container full of green slime poured out of the other end. It was just the kind of green slime you could buy in any toy store, but that didn't matter. It was disgusting, and that's all that anyone cared about. The band leader and half the football team stared at David in amazement. David, still unsure of what was going on, blew harder into his trumpet, and the green slime blew out of the end and all over the band. As far as the band was concerned, this was the end of the world. They all began to yell and run out of his way as David blew into the trumpet again, sending slime flying, this time along with a dull tone from the trumpet that sounded pretty rude. In 10 seconds the band had cleared out and was running to the locker rooms to get out of their slimmed outfits, leaving David alone, his face turning red, as he continued to slime the bleachers. The next trick, by far, was the most dangerous. I was there, because it was my turn to pull a prank. Cheryl and Randall came along to watch. Midnight. Wednesday. We stood outside True Lender's open bedroom window. Maybe we ought to think of another trick, said Cheryl. The lights were out in the house, and we were sure Drew was asleep, but still. No way, said Randall. This is perfect. Perfect. We, 075D, have to do it, trust me, Drew can sleep through anything. Once, he fell asleep in math, and they couldn't wake him up. They had to call in the nurse. Cheryl turned to me. If you still want to do it, then I'm with you. I smiled and carefully removed the screen, then climbed in through the open window. True Lender's room was a mess. I mean, I've seen my room get pretty scary, but this was a pigsty. It was hard to walk without stepping on things that crunched. Drew slept under a mass of covers in his bed. We could hear him snoring more loudly than the roar of the filter on the huge fish aquarium in the corner. Look at this, whispered Randall, pointing to a whole row of swimming trophies on a shelf above the aquarium. Cheryl put her finger to her lips to shut him up. Drew did not hear a thing. He continued snoring as I very carefully rolled the covers away from his feet. He was wearing dirty socks. Moving a fraction of an inch per second, I peeled back the socks until his feet, which smelled a little like chlorine and a little like vinegar, were sticking straight up at me. I reached my hand out to Cheryl, and she handed me the nail polish. When Drew woke up in the morning, just as we had thought, he didn't change his socks, and 15 hours after we had left his house, an incredibly embarrassed True Len, 076N, Durs had to explain to the entire swim team why his toenails were painted red. Eric Kilfoyle, the basketball star, was a sweater. Not the kind you wear, but the kind that drips all over the floor during a basketball game. Antiperspirant didn't help his sweating problem very much, but, as Darren told us, Eric would always roll on a sizable helping of antiperspirant under his arms before going out onto the court. The trick that Abby planned turned out to be much more complicated than it sounded, because not only did we have to switch antiperspirant bottles, but we also had to make sure that Eric never saw what he was coating his armpits with. In the end, we had to black out the locker room at the perfect moment, just to keep Eric and the rest of the basketball team in the dark as to what was going on. We were all there in the stands when the basketball team came out of the dark locker room and into the gym. Darren looked up from the floor and gave us the okay sign. The team wore their warm-ups through the layup drills. Finally, when the game was about to start, the warm-ups came off, revealing the team uniforms. Eric's was already beginning to look sweaty. It was jump ball, and, of course, Eric jumped. His arm went up, and in the excitement, nobody noticed Eric's under arms but the referee. The whistle dropped out of his mouth. The other team had possession of the ball, and Eric ran down the court, taking his position as center of the 2-1x2 zone. His arms went up, and that's when everyone else saw it, fluorescent green sweat under his arms, soaking the sides of his shirt. Well, the captain of the other team dribbled the ball through the defense, then stopped dead when he saw Eric's little problem. "Hey, what's with the armpits, dude?" said the kid with the ball. Now, when somebody says something about your armpits, you have to look. You can't help it, even if you're in the middle of a basketball game. Eric reached under his left arm and came out with a fluorescent green hand. The kid shot a basket over Eric's head to score. Had the joke ended there, we would have been more than satisfied, but it didn't. We didn't count on Eric being colorblind. "I'm bleeding," cried Eric, stumbling around the court, showing everybody his very green hands. "I'm bleeding. I'm bleeding." The game sort of stopped as everyone tried to figure out if this could be possible. If it was, Eric must have been an alien. "Help, I'm bleeding, I'm bleeding," he cried. "Call the nurse." TLFEJ 4 Fahrenheit's degree VFUB 0780, and everyone was so confused and dumbfounded by this weird turn of events that the nurse was called immediately. The most obnoxious of our tricks was a doubleheader. It involved two kids, and one of them was lost in space. You see, Mr. Milburn, the science teacher, had a collection of animals in his classroom. Animals that ranged from gerbils to lizards. Tommy Nichols, the ninth grade's foremost brain, kept his pride and joy in Mr. Milburn's room, Octavia, his beloved pet tarantula. Sometime after lunch, Tommy noticed that Octavia was missing, but try as he might, he could not seem to find her. She was not in her cage, she was not hiding in the bookshelf. It seemed she was nowhere in the room, and nobody could find her. Lost in space found her. Or should I say that she found him? I was particularly mad at Austin that day, so I couldn't wait to see the trick pulled off. You see, Austin had called me Gopher so much that everyone had started to call me that, I couldn't wait to get back at him. Anyway, it was a rainy day, and so Austin, as well as everyone else, came to school in a hooded jacket. In homeroom, at the end of the day, everyone put on their coats and waited for the bell to ring. Ralphie Sherman saw it first. "Hey, Austin," he said, "there's something in your hood." "Y79 Y, yeah, sure," said Austin, because nobody ever believed a word Ralphie said. "If there was something in my hood, would one do this?" And Austin, thinking himself pretty clever, put his hood on. When he pulled his hood off again, a tarantula was sitting on his head. "Ahhh!" he screamed, running around the room. "Get it off me. Get it off me." He wouldn't touch it. The thing was sitting smack on the middle of his head, but he was too grossed out to actually touch it. Well, just like with the snake, everybody in the room, including Mrs. Marlowe, our homeroom teacher, began to scream. Meanwhile, Austin ran around the room with Tommy Nichols running behind him, crying, "Don't hurt her. Don't hurt Octavia. She doesn't bite, she's a good tarantula." However, when a tarantula is doing push-ups on your scalp, you don't care how good it is. You just want it off. Watching Austin turn white as a ghost was the high point of my day, and then, as if it wasn't bad enough, Octavia got freaked out and tried to climb off. Unfortunately, the easiest way off of Austin's head was down the back of his shirt. Austin fell to the ground, shaking his shirt, but Octavia wouldn't come out. She'd had enough for one day. Austin tore off his shirt, ripping out all the buttons, and Octavia went sailing across the room. When she landed, she, T4FASHTFCLNADN, wasted no time in racing across the floor for a place to hide. "Don't hurt her," yelled Tommy Nichols. "She's tame, Ray, ally. She's a domesticated spider." But no one much cared. While most everyone stood on the tables, Octavia scampered around the room between the table legs, until she finally met an untimely end under the heel of Richard Fur, Gusson's shoe. Lost in Space sat on the floor in a daze, for once Act 2 ally Lost in Space. Tommy Nichols had collapsed to his knees, in tears, mourning his dearly departed spider, and Richard Ferguson threw his shoe into the waste paper basket, choosing to walk home barefoot. "Four," was the look on Drew Lender's face as he took off his socks, in the locker room, in front of the whole team, "and none of you got to see it," he said, gloating. "Tell us about it," said Abby. Okay, said Randall. Everyone in the club was listening. The whole team was done changing except for Drew, when the coach passed through the locker room on his way to the pool. "I started asking the coach questions to keep him there."
"You mean the coach was there too?"
asked Abby.
"I'm getting to it. I love it," said Abby. "Anyway, the coach starts telling me that, as usual, I'm in all of Drew's races, and as usual, I knew he'd take first place. Then, just like I predicted, Drew takes off those filthy, dirty socks. Jared, you did such a good job of painting his nails, it was incredible. I could have died. Anyway, Drew didn't notice it at first, he put his bathing suit on and didn't even see it, but the coach saw it."
"Oh, no!"
I screamed. This was great. Classic. Craw Jason. Classic. Just classic.
"Shut up, let me finish. Okay, so the coach sees him, toe, nails and all, they were fire engine red, you couldn't miss them, and the coach just says, 'Drew? Your feet.' And everyone looks down at Drew's toes. Nobody laughs, everyone thought it was for real, you know, like Drew did it all by himself. Everybody's saying, 'Wow,' and 'I don't believe it,' and stuff like that. Finally, Drew looks at his feet, then he turns to the coach, his eyebrows and face all wrinkled up like he's about T4Fay.
"Well," she continued, "I would like to read you this small poem that came out in the high school paper this week. Not junior high school, but high school. We made the big time," I said. "Listen to this." She unfolded the newspaper clipping and began reading
The team was on the field, and victory was at hand. Yes, everything seemed wonderful. Then David slimmed the band. He did it with such style and grace, you'd think that it was planned. Not one musician got off clean when David slimmed the band. The flutes were sprayed with sticky goo, their players filled with scorn. The band leader got slimmed on too when David blew his horn. The football players turned their heads and heard the band all say, "There is no doubt, we are grossed out," as they all ran away. TJFE6WB B86A. Next week they'll all wear raincoats and gloves upon their hands. Blame it all on one trumpet call when David slimmed the band. We were in stitches, laughing so hard our stomachs began to hurt. Ever have one of those laughing fits where one person's laughter keeps feeding the others until nobody can stop? That's what it was like. Between the slimming and the tarantula and the nail polish and the diary and the snake and the green blood, it was just too much for any group of human beings to handle. We just had to laugh and laugh. Finally, about 5 minutes later, we came down off of our laughing fit, wheezing and wiping our eyes dry. The fire had now become full and furious, sending sparks sailing into the dimming sky. We all relaxed, and I found that somehow, during the laughing fit, I had ended up leaning back, my head resting comfortably in Cheryl's lap. I looked up at her, and she smiled at me. She was playing with my hair. The strangest thing about it was that I did not feel uncomfortable at all. "This is classic," said Jason, and although he said that quite a lot, we knew exactly what he meant. Even though most of us had barely known each other 3 weeks ago, right now, at this one moment in time, we would all agree that we were the best friends in the world. I looked up at Cheryl, whose hair was dangling just an inch above my nose, and smiled. That's when I heard it. We all heard it. I snapped up out of Cheryl's lap, and we all turned our heads to listen. "What was that?" asked Randall. "SHHHH," Cheryl said. We all listened and heard it again, the scraping of branches, the crunching of leaves. Something was out there, just above the pit, on the other side of Stonehenge. We were all thinking the same thing. No one ever saw any bears in these woods, but Ralphie Sherman swore that once Bigfoot came up to him and then ran away. Of course, Ralphie Sherman also swore that he was picked up by one-eyed aliens, taken to a distant galaxy, and returned in time for evening television, so no one much trusted Ralphie Sherman. Still, you never really know. There were also stories of a mountain lion who was shot by a family hiking only 30 miles away. None of us had any weapons. There were deer in the woods, but what if it wasn't a deer? We were all silent and could still hear the faintest movement just a few feet away. I sniffed the air. Perhaps if it was some large animal I could smell it, but all I could smell was the smoke from the fire. And then I said the stupidest thing that has ever been uttered by anybody on the face of this earth. "I'll go check." T40 pound sign UB 88D, nobody else volunteered. I slowly stood and walked over to the dirt slope where one corner of Stonehenge had caved in dozens of years ago, and I made my way up. Now, on the other side of Stonehenge, I was all alone, and for all I knew this could have been the end of my life. Still, I forced myself on, because waiting there in the middle, like a sitting duck, wouldn't do any of us any good. I walked around Stonehenge, and I heard it again. Moving branches. There was no mistaking it. Something was up here, just around the corner of the old stone foundation. My heart began to beat faster. If I could just get a glimpse of it before it saw me, I'd be all right. If it were a deer, then fine, I would go back down, case closed. If it were something worse, I could warn everyone and we could scatter, we'd have better chances TFYTY. Of course, if we scattered, the thing would probably go after me first, since I was right there, but I wasn't about to start thinking things like that. I neared the stone corner and slowly peered around. Trees, trees, and more trees came into view, until I saw something at the far end turning a corner. It wasn't a deer. It wasn't Bigfoot. It was a kid. I saw his back and feet as he turned the corner, but did not see his face. Whoever it was had been watching us and had heard our secrets. Knew exactly what we had done and what was going on. If someone knew, then our whole club could be destroyed. I was not about to allow that. N89D, everybody hurry up here, some kid's been watching us. Everyone stood and raced up and out of Stonehenge. This way, I yelled. I rounded the next corner and saw him again, this time disappearing into the woods. He was trying to get away, the little spy. Is there only one of them? Asked Cheryl. I think so. If he tells, we're in lots of trouble. I know. The Shadow Club raced through the woods, and as our eyes began to adjust to the dim light, we could see him just 20 feet in front of us. I raced at full speed. He was near, in the road. At last I got close enough and dove on him, bringing him down. He was about my size, just a bit skinnier. A bit bonnier. I rolled him over and looked at the face before me. I instantly knew who it was, and so did the rest of the Shadow Club.